The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. I am with Zanati with regard to Symphony. I have to tell you, it's not my running song. I don't have running songs, but I like it, Howard. I have to say.
It's very screechy.
I mean, we don't always have to take the words so literally.
No, but it's the painfulness in the ears. Maybe, I don't know, is that not unnaturally high?
It probably is, but you know, there's certain talents that have to be aired sometimes.
Right. Yes, not always, though. Anthony, there is an increasing evidence in politics taking control of the decision-making process connected to the management of and response of COVID-19. Tell us about
this. Yeah. So this is a very, very unfortunate situation that we find ourselves in because, you know, on the one hand, we're trusting our politicians, trusting our leaders that they're doing the right things by us, by the general public. They're doing whatever they can in order to prevent further spread of COVID-19 and to provide as much relief to people who are suffering, either financially or medically. This is what we rely upon them to do. And yet, what we're finding within our political system more and more is that there is so much politics that is being that is involved in all of the decisions, and it really came to the fore yesterday. It's become generally known that the Prime Minister is trying to hang on to the jobs that are considered to be critical in managing this COVID crisis for members of the Likud. So, for example, Yuli Edelstein, who is a very, very dyed-in-the-wool Likud member, he's the Minister of Health, and other senior Likud people have been critically positioned in various committees in various places in order for the Likud to be seen to be managing the whole issue. And according to the powers that be, according to the sources, this is because the Prime Minister wants to be sure that the Likud is the one to get the credit for managing this successfully. Here's the problem. It's kind of coming back to bite him a little bit, because at the moment, less than 30% of Israelis actually are trusting the Prime Minister to manage and solve this coronavirus crisis that we're going through. So people are increasingly not trusting the Prime Minister and his efforts. And as I said earlier, it really came to the fore yesterday with a meeting of this Knesset committee that was due to decide upon whether gyms and swimming pools could be open. The Knesset coronavirus committee is under the chairmanship of Chaver Knesset, the member of Knesset, Yifat Shasha Biton. She has been appointed to chair this committee. She is very much a Likud member, very much seen to be part of the Likud and representing the Likud, but she didn't really toe the party line yesterday. And whereas the Prime Minister had apparently decided, along with the Ministry of Health, that opening of the gyms and opening of public swimming pools would not be generally allowed. And in fact, they said to her that they would allow the opening of swimming pools that are not enclosed. So outdoor swimming pools, yes, but indoor swimming pools, no. And indoor swimming pools generally mean hotels and gyms by and large. But when it came down to the discussion with huge representation from various members of the community, of the fraternity, of those who run the gyms, owners, lobbyists representing gyms, it was made quite clear that the gyms are really adhering to the rules, that they're really doing whatever they can. They're following the Ministry of Health guidelines very, very stringently. The Ministry of Health has actually complimented them on the effective way in which they've implemented the rules. They've been very, very infused. Infections coming from gyms. So all of the scientific and medical evidence suggests that gyms should not be shut down, and there are huge numbers of people who are employed and being supported by the gym industry. And by the way, let's also not forget that people's health depends to some degree on gyms, because those people who are not attending gym regularly might not be exercising at all. And so this is a broader service to the community. So she decided in her wisdom that she was going to allow the gyms to open. Well, that brought the house down, because Miki Zohar, who is Prime Minister Netanyahu's representative at that sort of level, was reported to have said, "You are done. I'm ousting you. Have a nice life."
Wow.
He was so furious with her for not towing the party line, that he was going to see the end of her. He wanted her suspended immediately from her role, unable to take any further decisions. That's not what's happened at the moment, but it kind of does bring a very ugly side of this out, which shows that there is so much politics going on, so many different interest groups being served here, that it's very difficult to see how we're going to manage our way through this effectively and in a way which people are being taken care of from a financial and from a medical point of view, rather than serving political interests. And of course, also the other point is that the Knesset was due to have discussed financial aid to those people who are self-employed, and in the end, due to technical reasons, the discussion didn't take place. And so once again, the decision is delayed, the money is delayed, the relief is delayed. All of this really needs to somehow be taken care of. Politics needs to be set aside. Somehow we need to get everybody working towards the same goal of making sure that people are healthy and people are taken care of financially, and that their psychological health is also taken into consideration. And the individual interests of people really need to be set aside. And this is a very sad situation, unfortunately, for all of us.
It is indeed. And certainly we've seen this, that that where governments employ a unified approach to this, that's when they succeed most. When they start ripping each other apart, as they continue to do, for example, in the United States, no good comes out of it, and ultimately, that's when the death toll or the those suffering increases dramatically. Speaking about suffering, Malka Leifer has lost her latest court appeal against the extradition proceedings. We spoke to our Australia correspondent a little bit earlier. Hopefully, she should be on her way back to Australia soon. How's this looking?
Well, I'm not sure that it's going to be so soon, because I think there's still a process that needs to be followed here that has yet to take place. Mm. I mean, there have been these ongoing debates, and you and I have spoken about this case, and I know you have very, very strong views about this. She has been trying to use the system as much as she possibly can in order to contend that she's mentally unfit to be extradited to Australia and to stand trial there on these sex abuse charges. 74 of them, I think, in total, that she is accused of. A very, very serious issue indeed. So she's been claiming that she's not mentally fit. The court originally agreed with her, then the court overturned that particular decision, and then her, because of the fact that the court had originally agreed with her, and so she felt that she had a certain case that she could present, and now that the court decided to overturn that decision, she went to the High Court of Justice, and her attorneys filed their appeal, and they decided that they were going to claim that the original court decision should really be the one that's upheld. In this particular event, the court did not agree. The High Court did not agree. The court decided that she is fit to stand trial, that the most recent court ruling by the district court should stand, and that she should go ahead with these extradition proceedings, although those proceedings are valid in terms of taking place against her in her current state of mental health. So even though the court has said she is mentally fit to stand trial, to go through the proceedings, I think there is still a certain element of the extradition that needs to take place. Now that this appeal has been resolved, the High Court has ruled, I think that the extradition proceedings can now proceed, and that eventually it is expected, on the basis of what we've seen at least up until now, that she will most likely be extradited to Australia to stand trial. And, you know, as we both said before, if she feels that she's innocent of these charges, then she should go and stand up in the court and defend herself. But because the fact that she's trying to feign being mentally unwell, one has a suspicion that there might be an element of the guilt. I know you've jumped to your conclusion, Howard.
I've not jumped. I've walked there, I've crawled there. Anthony, she's had years and years to be able to defend her position, but she hasn't.
She's not defended her position. 74 counts in total of sexual abuse and rape of minors while she was the headmistress of this religious school in Australia. I think that her time facing the justice system in Australia is likely to come. Obviously, Corona is not helping the whole extradition process, but I'm guessing that there will be a way of ultimately fulfilling this, considering how long the case has already been continuing so far. And I think that if she is indeed extradited to Australia, which I expect she will be, I think this will go a long way towards healing a huge rift which has opened up between the Australian Jewish community and the State of Israel. I think this is a really, really important step in healing that particular issue.
Yeah, indeed. Israeli Air Force have formed a new special force wing.
Yeah, this is an interesting story simply because it shows that the IDF is continuously evolving in the way that it organizes itself. And now the Israeli Air Force has decided to open this new special forces wing, which will effectively include all of the special forces that come under the auspices of the Air Force. So traditionally, it's Unit 669 and it's Shaldag. The new special force wing is called Wing Seva, Kanaf Sheva. And there will be a number of different units that will come under the Special Forces Wing. And this really reflects what's already happened in the Army. So whereas before, in the Army, there were Special Forces units spread out amongst all the other different battalions, now what they've done is they've grabbed all of the Special Forces units from all those battalions wherever they existed, and they brought it under one single Special Forces unit all together. Each of those units still maintain their identity as they had before, but they now come under the umbrella of a special forces unit, which is headed up by somebody who has the rank of a colonel. And the same has now been developed in the Air Force. So one assumes that after having done it in the Army a couple of years ago, that has been a very successful transition, and in the Army it's worked pretty well, and now in the Air Force they're going to be doing the same thing. So this is just another indication of how things are moving around in the IDF, and all of these super special forces will now come under a singular wing. It will be headed up by Colonel O, whose name is unknown to the general public.
That's how you know you're really cool, when you're known as Colonel O. Just the letter of your name. I love that.
And your face has to be has to be blurred out in pictures in the newspaper and things like that. Exactly. But of course, it has a very, very senior sponsorship indeed. And the head of the Air Force, the head of the IDF, of course, have vetted this, and so hopefully that'll help the effectiveness of our Air Force and streamline the way in which they do business.
Absolutely, absolutely unbelievable. There is one more story, but we'll have to chat about that tomorrow. Interesting one. Indeed. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. We'll catch you tomorrow, same time, same place.